I don't really have any contact with that. When I was last in regular employment, I was a member of the union. But now I don't have any contact with the union. I mean, it's a laudable aim, you know, to a socialist trade union without leaders. You know, what I'd like some idea on is the kind of method for achieving that. How are we going to go about it? How are we going to deploy our resources in getting there? And then once we know that, then we can, you know, work out whether it's a worthwhile project or not. But we don't know how much success it's going to have. I think the only real way to honestly transform the trade union is to just gather in more socialists so that they become bigger percentage in the trade unions and have more say.
Yeah. Well, I agree with that. That'd be the perfect way of doing it, you know. Obviously, you know, if it goes that way, then that's great. You know, if we end up, you know, if we kind of in the realm of ideas can persuade a load of people to be socialists and then join these unions and transform the unions, and if it goes that way, then that's brilliant. What I'm saying is that we should explore, though, that it might not go that way, and that one of the ways that it doesn't go that way is that if we can democratise trade unions, then we can kind of empower the working class in such a way that might lend them to becoming socialist. So it's just, this is what I mean about the kind of dialectic of it. Yeah.
My question was, but how do we set about it?
Okay, well, in practical terms, I think one thing we can do is just, as individual workers within trade unions, we can call for as much democracy in those unions as possible, and we can call for the unions to organise on a class-wide basis, and we can just start basically putting the IWW point of view across, which is that there should be a class-wide one union for workers. It should be an international trade union, and it should organise itself in a non-hierarchical way. And I think that's what we should do. And whether that, you know, whether, as I say, you know, whether Unite or the NUT or whatever proves to be malleable enough for us to be able to democratise the NUT, then that's the kind of question. Or whether it proves that it can't be malleable enough and we have to join the IWW, then it might be that we have to kind of dual card for a bit and persuade our fellow workers to join. But, you know, the workers that we're getting to join the IWW, they might not be socialists, but we might be able to persuade them of the need to get rid of leaders, for example. But they might not be fully persuaded that the abolition of the wages system is possible. But that, to me, is a good starting point and a good foundation in terms of going the other way about it, where, you know, we have a foundation within the trade union movement where they're more receptive to then socialist ideas within the kind of ideological frame. If you see what I mean?
Yeah. I think, you know, personally, yeah. When I first joined the party, several Evans, who's no longer with us, in conversation, told me that knowledge was power, and that if he had more knowledge than me, then he was more powerful than me. But then if he shared the knowledge, power of that knowledge was more than double. There's some that I was grabbing the thumb of the pub. And I think that, you know, if we're in trade unions, I mean, what we do, as I did when I was working, if people are interested, because you can't, like, you know, you can't butthole them. People are interested. You just give your analysis and proposition. And it's up to them, you know, so it's a matter of resources. You know, the more of us there are, the more of us there are in trade unions, the more effect we can have on them. I don't know, you know, just have to see where we're gonna, you know, how we're gonna. I mean, we don't have the resources to start. You know, basically, it's just getting people engaged with trade unions. That's it. And putting the case, and then once we put the case, honestly, then they can make. That's my point. Then they can make their own conclusions what to do.
Peter.
Just in the question of democracy, in that union term, the members could elect the delegate, the man who would go and take up the cases, as a union official among the employers. And in the face of that would seem quite a democratic thing if the members are voting for the actual delegate and that type of thing. And of course, there was a group in the union who obviously didn't fancy that idea. Because what they say is, no, what we need to do is get folk who are better negotiators. And the only way to get a better negotiator is for us to interview them and so on. And eventually that is the way their union turned out. That anybody that gets a job in the union has obviously been vetted, as it were, by the boys up top. And they decide if he's going to be good enough. But quite obviously he's the type of guy that's going to tell them about how the Labour Party's a great thing and so on. But if you look at it the other way, when we did have that particular type of democracy, it still meant that the type of guy that got in, the man who was getting supported, whether it be the Communist Party or the Trotskyist or so on, and we could obviously, because they were organising up, maybe we could get their man in to be the organiser in that area. And well, quite obviously, he wasn't yet talking about socialism either. So the democracy side, you know, it's what democracy we're talking about. So this is where I can only get back to the idea that, as I was saying at the beginning, that the Socialist Party, obviously it tells people to join the union and so on, and we're certainly not against democracy if it's going to be the type of democracy that we're thinking about and so on. But at the end of the day, you're still left with a situation about the politics of the members and how is the members' politics going to be. Well, at the moment, as I was saying before, you're talking about occupying a factory and so on. The unions at the moment, because they've passed the redundancy payments and all the rest of it, take credit for all that sort of stuff. When it comes to a redundancy, they say, well, as long as there's no forced redundancies. So the door's open for them to run down the business at will, and as long as there's no force. But it will obviously reach the stage where there is force.
Mm.
Situations, but under the law, because that's the law that they agreed with, that there's, as long as the employer is going to pay out so much, you know, according to the law, then you're going to actually be breaking the law if you're going to start saying we're occupying a factory or is it? Because the law states that the employer can obviously, given the circumstances, use the squad. Whereas, you know, so you'd be saying to them, that argument would be saying to them, okay, you occupy the factory, but you're still stuck with the ones who might still think they're going to get a job, and they're still, you know, have to stay where they are. And of course, when their turn comes eventually, they'll still get all the benefits. There's always that threat now where they can say to them, well, if you're not going to do that, then the redundancy payments and all that's not going to count, and you're going to be find a very difficult situation to even carry out that particular policy or say no forced redundancies. So I can't see other than a political understanding coming from the working class. You know, I don't know how we're going to do that because it's not working for us at the moment. That's the only way we can get it.
When you answer him, would you like to carry on? Do you want to rest?
Oh, it's all right. No, yeah, I'll carry on. It's all right, yeah. Okay, yeah, sorry if I'm just repeating myself, but I just kind of, I think there's, as I say, there is this kind of relationship between socialist ideas and between the structure of the union and the structure of the working class. I think, it's not obviously the only reason, there's a whole load of reasons why we don't have a socialist majority at the moment. I think a big part of it is the fact that working class activity and working class forms of self-organisation have been kind of co-opted by the ruling class and been kind of put into the Labour Party or been put into these kind of hierarchical structures. So what originally, you know, if you go back to kind of like Tolpuddle, would have just been a few workers meeting up in a field and saying, like, what are we going to do kind of thing, deciding amongst themselves, saying, like, okay, you go ahead and go and do this or whatever, you know, and just kind of deciding on a really basic level has become a kind of really hierarchical form of organisation. And obviously part of the reason that it's done that is ideological, and part of the reason that it's done that is just kind of practical. You know, if you've got a massive union, there's, I suppose, in some level, some sort of, you know, there's practical benefits maybe of having that hierarchical system. But what I'm saying is that we as socialists should be calling for the democratisation of trade unions and should be advocating class-wide trade unionism and should be supporting the most radical tactics and demands of unions possible. And there are practical questions within that. Yeah, in capitalism, I think that, you know, a lot of it will fail. But I think that I don't think that we should just sit and wait for it to be the kind of outcome of the development of the political consciousness of the working class. I think that it works both ways. I think that with the development of the political consciousness of the working class, we'll see more radical trade unions. But with more radical trade unions and more power in the hands of the working class, socialist ideas will be able to develop. And that's why I think that, yeah, the party should come out more kind of explicitly in support of the one leaderless trade union model, rather than just kind of like having this approach I think we have at the moment where we just say, well, you know, unions are unions, they're defensive models, do whatever you think is practical, whatever you think is best, but no actual real kind of notion that they might be transformative, and there might actually be real questions of principle in the way that we organise a trade union as socialists, and questions of the trade unions advancing socialism. But yeah, I mean, you're right that there's problems in trying to get unions to advance socialism, but then there's problems in trying to get a political party like the SPGB to advance socialism. You know, there's all sorts of problems, there's all sorts of things that might not work about it. But I think then at least we would be kind of like playing both sides of the game.
Yeah, to come back on a brief point about the question of unions negotiating wages, kind of my key point was, if you you have a large union with large amounts of non-socialists within it, if it starts to do anything that impairs with its ability to successfully negotiate wages, and say you have the minority of socialists within it calling for ever-increasing occupations, what have you, if that's not winning the wages, then the non-socialists will go off, take the union away with them, and you will end up with a union, because someone will have to always have an organisation that negotiates the wages. So you can have a revolutionary socialist trade union, but if it's not negotiating the wages successfully, then a union will come back, and the non-socialists will largely staff that. And the extension of this is, I don't see a necessary correlation between trade unionism and socialist consciousness. I mean, no one's here calling for us to join rugby clubs and turn them into revolutionary organisations. And there's just as little correlation between kicking an oblate spheroid around the field and negotiating wages and socialism.
Do you want to reply?
Yeah. I think for starters, you're just setting up a bit of a kind of false problem there. Because I think it's not a kind of either-or situation. If you have radicalisation amongst a trade union, right, and if the trade union is organising for its workers, and if the demands and the political opinions of the workers are more radical and go beyond negotiating wages, and the long term goal is beyond that, then it puts it in a much better position. You know, it's a bit like I think of an analogy here. So it's a little bit like, if we're kind of like bartering over something. You know, if I say to you, I want to buy something off you, right? I want to start with the lowest price possible, right? I want to say, right, I'll buy it off you for £1. I might know in the long run we'll probably settle for about £5, okay? But if I go in and say, right, I'll buy it off you for £5, then in the end it's going to come out as £10. So in a way, I think that the radicalisation of trade unions is to the practical advancement of the kind of day-to-day struggle for workers. And it's a kind of false problem you're setting up there, because workers, yeah, that's what I think, you're shaking your head. So
take my union, where there's a lot of low-paid members who are extraordinarily reluctant to strike. And so therefore, all that can happen is that the union negotiators eventually have to settle. It's remarkably difficult to get them into a strike at all.
Mm.
And as long as those sort of people remain in the majority, no matter how an active minority might well be very active and very radical. As long as the vast majority of the union are fairly sedate, then that's all the union's ever going to be able to secure. And the radical minority will have to go along with the non-radical majority.
Well, that's true. Yeah, of course it's true. Yeah, but that's exactly the problem. You know, like, it's a kind of, I think it's like the sort of basic socialist proposition as well, that, like, you know, if you own something, you kind of take care of it. So if you in a socialist society where we actually own the means of production, we own the planet, we give a damn about it and we take care of it. At the moment, the working class don't own the trade unions. The trade unions are owned by Trotskyists on one hand or conservatives on the other, as you say, you know, and that's the problem. So when we democratise trade unions, and when people actually feel empowered by being in a trade union, feel like their kind of opinions matter as a trade union, and feel kind of like a human being, basically, feel, you know, that, like, their activity in a trade union is an unalienated form of activity, it's a kind of self-affirming form of activity, then I think you will find that you'll have a kind of less complacent working class. And at the moment, you know, I don't think it's any coincidence that this kind of whole trade union history has found itself just completely kind of sapped up in either kind of like sort of left-wing reformism or just kind of like this kind of conservative stuff. And I think that's a big reason why you have complacency among the membership of the trade unions. So it's kind of like, I think this, you know, the Socialist Party is kind of right in a way that it's kind of, the problem with trade unions is more, you know, is a reflection of the political consciousness of the working class. But I'm just saying that it kind of works both ways. The way that the trade unions are structured has an effect on the political consciousness of the working class. It's a kind of, but I guess we just disagree.
Anyone? Yeah. Yes. Sorry, I missed you.
So why unions and why not like anarcho-syndicalism? Like this solidarity donation. Because I'm a member of Unison, and I'm also, I go to a lot of Salford meetings. And I know that I find the Salford meetings more of an alienated activity than I do being a member of Unison. But also, the Solidarity Federation want to abolish the wages system. I mean, the ways of wanting it is very different to how socialists want it, but they've got a lot more in common. And I think, like, a lot of anarcho-syndicalist groups, they're growing and more and more happening in the UK.
Mm.
So why not that? And why unions?
Okay, well, I suppose this is a sort of question of what you mean by union, isn't it? Because obviously a lot of the stuff that Salford do, I'd support, and I think the socialists should support them. And that obviously isn't the SPGB stance, but that is my stance. You know, I think, you know, like a lot of, you know, and there's a kind of good thing about, like, the anarchists as well, is that they're pretty creative when it comes to getting the job done, you know. Like, they go in, you know, they don't just kind of, like, just sort of go on strike and stuff. They set up picket lines that really just embarrass the employers, or, you know, if a worker doesn't get paid, for example, rather than doing the kind of classic sort of trade union thing of, like, taking it to court and stuff, they just set up, you know, and you can do that, yeah. And obviously it works, it kind of, it's a tactic that works really well with restaurants and wouldn't necessarily work with factories, but, you know, they kind of, So a lot of what Salford do is great, yeah, of course, and I've got a lot of time for Salford, but obviously I think that there's a problem with the anarchist position when it comes to all the stuff to do with the state. So I suppose what I'm really kind of talking about is some sort of kind of hybrid approach between the SPGB position and the kind of the stuff that the anarchists do, because...
Yeah, that's what I was kind of trying to advocate, because obviously, like, unionising is a bit of a kind of hot topic in this room at the minute, and a lot of people are, like, having an issue with that, but I love Salford, but disagree with it on so many reasons. But why not set up, like, a grassroots, similar, I don't know, you could call it, like, socialist, syndicalist or something, I don't know, instead of, you know, trying to join current unions that aren't going to have our interests at heart. It would be very difficult to step up to somewhere like Unison or UNICEF or wherever and try and get your point across. And I've been in Unison once, and it was a really bizarre experience. All the men were the union workers, and upstairs in the offices, and all the secretaries were women working for them.
Right.
And it was an incredibly, like, sexist and bizarre environment, and I thought themselves they needed to join the union. What I'm kind of advocating then is, and I agree with you, kind of grassroots organisation, or setting it up ourselves. I like that when you talked about that unalienated activity, like whilst you're at ASK, and that is what I think is the core thing. But then I kind of, you lost me when you were talking about joining current unions and trying to advocate socialism, because I just can't see that working.
Okay, yeah, so, well, I think you could be right about that, to be honest. You know, as I say, it's a sort of, it's a practical question, and it's not one that I've got a kind of definitive answer to. I mean, it's sort of similar, really, to the kind of, like, political question. You know, the SPGB argue that, you know, there's no good, like, trying to join the Labour Party and trying to make the Labour Party into a socialist party. The Labour Party wasn't set up to be a socialist party. It's not going to be a socialist party. It may well be that, in the end, you know, we have to form trade unions all over again for ourselves, and you know, and enshrining them, you know, basic sort of democratic principles so that they're run by the workers, and that are more radical. But obviously, you know, if you just sort of walk into a workplace, then you know, the NUT might be the only option for you. And I think, you know, this is why the IWW advocate the kind of dual card idea, that you know you join the NUT and you do all the stuff around the NUT of going on strike and stuff. You know, obviously it's unacceptable for a worker to scab or anything like that just because it happens to be a bourgeois trade union. You know, you still kind of show your solidarity with your fellow workers. Whilst you're in the NUT, you do what you can to democratise it. But yeah, it might well be that ultimately what we need is a whole new movement. Yeah.
Like a bottom-up kind of.
Yeah.
You mentioned that earlier with the housing associations, tenants associations.
Yeah.
I would have liked to hear more of that.
Yeah.
Do you want to come back then?
Oh, no, it's all right, yeah.
I think it was Rob, or was it Simon at the back again? Did you have your hand up? Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you, Rob.
Yeah, my ex-union sister has just articulated the party position, which is that if you have got a group of us who are party members in the same workplace, we form a trade union. So that is the correct way to do it, to get all of those people who are also of the same political mind and then they can form that workplace trade union. It would be unlikely, really, because any workplace that you come to is going to have dozens of people in it in order to have an effective bargaining unit, and most of those people will not be our party members. Yeah? So in practice, we can't do it. In practice, as people who want to join trade unions, we join them as trade unionists, and we have those at work arguments in the park.
Yeah.
Now, if we were in a situation where there was a more how can I put it, a more sort of like leftist, socialist, whatever mood abroad amongst our class, with more sense of resistance, then you would have lots of different people with lots of different ideas along those lines in your workplace, and you still could not form a consistent political trade union, because you would always be marginalising some people who are on one side who think something about syndicalism, on another side who think whatever. So there's really no point that you could actually form a union that was nearly as effective as a proper existing trade union without stamping on your toes before we've already got whatever society we've been aiming for. There's no point in the middle of that you can set up a trade union that is not, you know, not hampering itself by engaging in needless political activity.
Well, that's what I'm trying to question, though. Why is that? Because, you know, the early union movement wasn't affiliated to the Labour Party. It wasn't, you know, it's set up by workers, right? You know, workers did it. So what I'm asking is why, you know, it's not necessarily that, like, we set up like a purely socialist union. Everyone in that union is socialist. I'm just saying that we should have a slightly more nuanced view. It's not just that kind of like we either have this kind of like union full of like pure socialists who just do, you know, are members of the SPGB and advocate socialism. And as the SPGB develop, obviously this union would develop. Or that we have kind of like these kind of like we've resigned ourselves to, oh, well, you know, it's the NUT. What can you do about it? Affiliate to the Labour Party, blah, blah, blah. You know, what we do is we actually say like, let's get into the union movement and try and democratise the union movement. So, you know, democratise it, not necessarily make it to a socialist thing, but democratise it. And by democratising it, I think we're going to be laying some of the foundations to create a class conscious, a socialist conscious working class. So it's not, it's not really like, yeah, I mean, you're right. Obviously, we can't have socialist trade unions until we've got socialists, but we might be able to. And being kind of more open to kind of anarcho-syndicalist ideas or one-class trade union ideas, we might be able to start kind of radicalising trade unions, and we might be able to start, democratising trade unions. And in democratising trade unions, we create a kind of foundation and create the kind of sense of empowerment and the sense of sort of community and unalienated activity that acts as a kind of to springboard for the development of socialist ideas. And it might not be enough in itself. It might be that the development of socialist ideas then come back to play on it in such a way where, you know, because there's more socialist ideas floating around, because there's more socialists that have been sort of radicalised through the trade union activity, there's therefore more, so, you know, so you have this kind of reciprocal thing going on. But I think the problem with the party stance is that it just takes it all from one angle. It says, you know, once we've got socialists, then we'll have socialist trade unions. But I think that like we might not be able to get full on socialist trade unions, but if we democratise trade unions and if we organise around the three basic things, whatever I said, the way, you know, that like a union for the entire working class, a leaderless trade union, and a trade union that's prepared to kind of not be affiliated to bourgeois political parties and that's prepared to make more radical demands, then we're in a position where, you know, people are going to be more open to socialist ideas. That's. It's a Marxist stance as far as I'm concerned.
Did you have your hand up? And then it's you.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, sorry. Yeah, I spoke earlier, but I'm a member union as well. There's two things to straighten me. One is that when I get my ballot papers for the Union National Executive Committee, there's two groups of candidates. There's the Labour Party support candidates who basically don't want the union to go on strike, just want to embarrass the Labour Party. There's the Trotskyist candidates who want, you know, for obvious what they want, and but at least they're willing to do something. And I usually end up if there's two two posts on it, you end up voting for one take, bite one drop. But the other thing that frustrates me is that you can't, the members don't, they won't do anything. Yeah. But once upon a blue moon, when a blue moon comes along, they do go on strike, and that's time to win it.
Mm.
So we go on strike for a day, and the bosses give in. So if we agree, we should be encouraging our fellow union members to organise their union on a non-leadership basis and not affiliated to bourgeois parties. Whether we do that by going down the IWW road or doing it, organising it within the existing unions, I think personally, we've got these existing unions, they're big organisations, we should, let's do both. But where I don't agree with you is trying to encourage, you know, us, the workers, to take industrial action in order to achieve demands which employers cannot meet for political reasons, because I think it will be a disaster. We need to build democratic, powerful unions that can organise the workers democratically, where the workers have ownership of those unions and where they're capable of winning gains for our class. But the trade unions are not a political organisation in the sense of a revolution organisation. When we have a majority of socialists amongst the working class, well, then all organisations will be revolution organisations.
Do you want to reply to that?
That's the thing, though. That's why I think kind of like begging the question. Because if you say, like, yeah, the trade unions are just this, then that's kind of all they are. And if socialists sort of resign themselves to saying that that's all they are, of all people, you know, as socialists we say, right, all the trade union is you know, something that negotiates with the capitalist class and it accepts the basic propositions of capitalism, then that's all they'll ever be, you know. And that's what I think we need to change. We need to, like, and you're right, you know, like, I know it's not a kind of light thing that I'm advocating when I talk about, you know, direct action and workers' occupations and stuff like this. And it might, you know, we might lose and a load of people might get arrested. But if we don't start, you know, trying to actually fight capitalism and denormalise capitalism on a daily basis, then it just, you know, the socialist movement then just gets kind of stuck at just doing this kind of like the one side of the coin type thing where we just talk about it in terms of ideas and everything's got to be kind of legal and things like that. I think that there's a lot to be said for kind of radicalising stuff, you know. And if you look at, like, you take, like, anarchist Spain, for example, right? Like, you know, obviously anarchist Spain was a disaster, and a big part of the reason that anarchist Spain was a disaster was because, you know, they weren't prepared to deal with the state in any way. But what we actually have with anarchist Spain is an example that you can use. You know, when people say, like, you know, to work only in the means of production, it will never work, you know, it can never happen. With anarchist Spain, actually, like, you can say, well, look at anarchist Spain. Anarchist Spain workers did do it, and it didn't, you know, collapse in on itself. So when workers do take power, it kind of it proves what socialists are saying, that the workers can take power. So the action kind of proves the ideological message of socialism. And this is what I mean, that we should kind of, like, just because we're against reformism in the kind of political sphere, and we've got to be against reformism in the political sphere, and we're right to do that, it doesn't mean that we shouldn't be kind of open to kind of anarcho-syndicalist ideas in the kind of economic sphere. I'm just kind of repeating myself, so I guess we just disagree.
Yeah, I think all the members of the World Socialist Movement believe in the idea of social transformation politically through a national and obviously international world socialist movement. That's how the social transformation will take place. But as far as the more I hear about any references to trying to take over existing trade unions, in inverted commas, the more different that is going to be from actually bringing about a socialist revolution, because the existing trade union movement has been absorbed decades, maybe 100 years or so ago, by capitalism. And as I come back to this word trades, I would suggest
if we do set up our own unions, we call them something like socialist or workers, no, workers socialist union, something like that. That's just a suggestion, obviously. there are other alternatives. But let us not use the word trade. Now, not just because capitalism is very much all about trade, but when we talk about trades in trade unions, it's divisive. We're talking about the workers in a certain factory, or teachers, or librarians, or whatever. Divisive. If we had one big union, if we want to supplement the political side with one big socialist union, then that's fair enough. But certainly the important thing is to avoid a situation in which we're trying to take over some organisation which has just been part of capitalism.
Okay, so I agree with you on one of your points and disagree with you on the other point then, because in terms of the question of trade unions, yeah, I mean, I agree. I don't think, I was probably a bit sort of sloppy in my language, but I don't think that, I'm not advocating for trade unions ultimately. I'm advocating for one union, and that's not specific to a trade. And I believe that unions can have a transformative power, and therefore, the trade union is probably a bad word to use. I don't want to see more trade unions. I do want to see unions and unionisation in the working class. But I accept your distinction between trade unions and class wide unions. But in regard to your other point, I'd like to make a distinction between socialists taking over unions and what I'd call workers reclaiming unions. Because obviously, I'm not advocating here this kind of Trotskyist thing of you go in and you kind of like try and radicalise a union by taking it over in a leadership sense. I'm just saying that as socialists, and but mostly not just as socialists, just as workers, right? And I think maybe one of the problems in our thinking is that we have this kind of quite a dichotomised view between socialists and workers, is that as workers, we need to reclaim unions. We need to reclaim unions for ourselves. Original unions weren't, so we can turn around to unions now and say, yeah, look, they're affiliates of the Labour Party, but unions preceded the Labour Party, and unions preceded the kind of conservative trade union leadership. So I think that for the Socialist Party should have a kind of, we should have a more nuanced approach to unions, and we should have an order of preference for unions. We should look at a union and say, right, is this union, is it a class-wide trade union? Is it a leaderless union? To what extent is it actually run by the workers? And that should be kind of like part of the key basis of how we assess a union. So it's more about the working class taking back control of the union movement. And that in itself, because workers will be in power, and because, as I say, they'll get to experience kind of an unalienated form of activity and a sense of community, that will lend itself to socialist ideas. So it's not kind of, there's quite an important distinction there, I think, between socialists taking over unions and what I'm advocating, which is working class reclaiming the trade union movement for ourselves.
Is there any short question, and we'll give Johnny a rest and take a little break? Or do you wish to carry on? He's...
Tea time.
I see no hands up. John?
Yeah, tea time, yeah, of course, yeah.
Before you bash off, I think, Mike, you want to say anything about this? There's nothing happening. Thank you very much. Thank you. Doubly enjoyable.
Thanks.